This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. So how much time have you got for questions?
We can manage a few minutes. It would be most discourteous to speak to you and leave. I do have other things to do, but I'm very happy to take any comments or questions for
very good.
Who's five or 10 minutes, if there's anybody.
We have a very shy audience here. Come on, who's going to... Right, you've got a question.
In Britain, nobody ever wants to go first.
Yeah. Not quite true.
Absolutely not here.
Yeah,
Adrian Wyatt from Aspire, which is a publication by and for autistic people.
Sorry, Adrian,
people.
Keep it quite short.
Yeah,
question.
Yeah. And also co-chair Autistic Rights Movement UK. I'm very concerned that you seem to think that special education schools, special schools, should stay. The Northern Ireland government doesn't think so, and they're quite happy to implement Article 24 of the UN Disability Convention in full. It is time that Great Britain came into line with other countries which are implementing it in full and integrated special schools and got rid of them. We don't segregate black people. We shouldn't segregate disabled people either.
Very good.
And
Thank you.
I'm grateful to the gentleman for that question and for the point of view that it contains. And the short and honest answer to it is that I respect your point of view, but I'm afraid I simply don't agree with it. I mean, it's an absolutely legitimate view. It's your view. It's obviously your organisation's view. I also accept, for the avoidance of doubt, that it is the view of a lot of other people as well. But, you always have this in politics, ladies and gentlemen. There is another point of view. And that other point of view, that other opinion, is that there is a role for special schools. Anybody who knows me in this special educational debate knows that I'm absolutely not what might be called a special schools fanatic. And, sir, I accept that there was once a time, and it was a lamentable time, when it was thought, it was the sort of default assumption of the establishment, that anybody, going back a period of years, with a club foot, or dare I say it, even in times gone by, as professionals know, somebody who was left-handed was somehow thought to be a bit odd, quirky, and should either have it bullied out of them or should be lobbed into a special school and sort of institutionalised. And that was totally wrong. And I absolutely agree with you. My own personal view is that it is a very much a minority of children on the special educational needs spectrum who require a special school. I agree with you. But where you say you personally think they should be abolished altogether, as I say, this may not satisfy you, but I respect your view, but I don't agree with it.
Good. Thank you so much. Have we got another question? Yes, this lady in the front row here.
Thank you. Belinda Blank. I work for Treehouse. I'd like to ask you, in the work that we do, and I work in transition, we often come across... one of the big problems is this issue between housing and social care and health, and these departments are not joined up. And what you find, particularly among local authorities, is one department doesn't see the view of the other, and what that can result in is costs to one department that another could have alleviated, and so on and so forth. And I'm concerned to know what, if anything, government is doing about looking at the fact that, for example, a person, you might take a young person with high-functioning autism who is not receiving the support and care he needs, and as a result will end up in the criminal justice system. And our prisons are full of young people with autism, and it's a national disgrace that I don't think
so. So forgive me, what's the question?
As a taxpayer, is the government... I'm a British taxpayer. Is the government doing anything to look at the fact that certain departments want to save money by not investing in the education or the social care, and that costs me more because it's coming out of the criminal justice system budget, but it doesn't bother the people in education because that's not their budget and they are going to be promoted on economies?
And in answer to your question, is there anything specific in government that is happening on this front? If there's anything happening today... And I'm not aware of it, is the honest answer to your question. However, a constant theme of my campaigning, but also campaigning by a lot of other people in Parliament, has been that government must take a joined-up approach. so that all the relevant agencies are involved. Now, quintessentially, and I think I saw a bit of nodding when I made this point, this is true in relation to education and health, where very often in the commissioning process a game of table tennis is played. But, of course, it's true more widely. It's true in relation to social services providers. It's also true in relation to the provision of housing and in relation to the criminal justice system. One admittedly small part of the speech and language review I did included consideration of provision, or rather the lack of it, in young offenders' institutions. And David Ramsbottom, the former Chief Inspector of Prisons, and I spoke many times and went to see Jack Straw and others, and I've made the point to the present Secretary of State for Justice, Ken Clark, that it is absolutely critical that when people are in institutions, they get the help that they need. Otherwise, you have a situation in which they go into YOIs or prison uneducated, untrained, unqualified, unemployed and unwell, and they come out uneducated, untrained, unqualified, unemployed and unwell, and it's just the revolving door of the criminal justice system all over again. More widely, I will continue myself to try to impress on Michael Gove, Andrew Lansley, Ken Clark, and other ministers, including those responsible for housing, which is really communities and local government, Eric Pickles, that they've got to take a holistic view of this and have some sort of interdepartmental group which forms an overall policy. And I didn't dwell on it, but I referred to it. When people go into adulthood, often, frankly, the windscreen shatters and there's nothing left. And I found generally, looking at speech and language, and I'm sure it's true in relation to autism, that the particular concern is at points of transition, preschool to primary, primary to secondary, secondary to post-16. And provision at post-16 for people on the autistic spectrum, this is not a party political point, it's been true under successive governments, has been deplorable. And I hope that I can persuade in a non-partisan way the present government to keep that which was done well by the last government and to try to do a lot more.
Good, thank you very much indeed. I think we're running out of time. I would just like to take up one thing, if I may, the statement that prisons are full of people with autism. That is incorrect. Frankly, that is incorrect. We don't know. But there's no evidence that there is significant overrepresentation. That's why we're doing research on that area. But all the research we have done...
Actually, there is.
No, sorry, I'm not going to make this a debate. The research we have done said that there is no overrepresentation, right, but we are doing more research.
Well, that, Geoffrey, that's helpful to me. I know there is a very large overrepresentation of people who can't communicate properly, but I take your point about autism, and you're absolutely right, we must be guided by the evidence, yeah. And I take note of what you tell me on that point, and thank you for educating me.
Thank you so much. So, have you time for more? One more?
One more.
One more, right.
My name is James Morgan. I'm the chairman of the Autistic Diagnostic Research Centre in Southampton. The Autism Act started life as a private member's bill and is now an act. Do you think it can have a really significant effect, and do you think it's had one yet?
I think it would be wrong to say that it's yet had a significant effect. I think it psychologically was a boost to the autism community, but it's very early days to say that it's yet had any great effect. It's been on the statute book for considerably less than a year. I took part in the debates on that bill. I put in for it myself in the ballot. My name didn't draw lucky. And Cheryl Gillan, who's now Secretary of State for Wales, drew lucky and pioneered that bill and pushed it to the statute book. And I was there to support her, I think, throughout when it was debated on the floor of the Commons. Yeah, it's not yet made a difference. I think it can, but it will have to be gripped by government. It won't just happen. And if I may say so, this may be a slightly controversial point, but some sort of national drive is needed. I don't want to get too drawn into the argument about localism, because it sometimes causes rows between the parties, and I need to avoid getting drawn into those rows. But I would simply say that whilst I understand that local autonomy has a role to play, and that the local makeup of individual areas will differ one from another, so some account has to be taken of the opinion of local professionals and the merits of different provision according to different need, nevertheless, you have to have some sort of national standard. and, in my opinion, some sort of legislative framework for the pursuit of policies for minority communities, sizable, but minority communities. Because if you simply say, oh, it's all up to the local health service or the local education service, the trouble with that is that when there is pressure on resources, is not the danger that on a sort of utilitarian basis, a sort of Benthamite idea of, you know, the greatest happiness for the greatest number, money will tend to be shoveled in the direction of large numbers of people, even if they're not the neediest people. So you've got to have some sort of protective mechanism in place to ensure that there is a minimum standard of service or something similar for everybody on the autistic spectrum. And if that means an element, which it does, of central direction, then that seems to me that that's an example of where central direction and an element of stipulation from the government is actually in the interests of the autism community and the interests of the country as a whole. I suppose what I'm really saying is government can be a force for a nuisance and can be a force for bad, but government can also be a force for good, and we need to maintain a balanced and sensible approach to the subject. I hope that that's of some interest. But yes, I'm optimistic that if we keep campaigning and keep pushing, and we've got ministers whose minds are focused on the subject, we can make some meaningful progress. But there is going to be the most enormous competition for resources in the next few years. And therefore, I suppose I would say to the autism community, it may seem rather prosaic, but, you know, get savvy, get organised, and get active. I'm sorry if that's not a very welcome message, but, you know, I don't think it's for me just to come and utter sweet nothings in your ears. The simple fact is you've got to be the most effective campaigners of the lot. And by the way, if it's any comfort to you, already the autism lobby is regarded with vastly greater attention and respect in government than ever before. And that's a tribute to people like you. But I'm afraid rather than content yourselves with that, you've just got to say, well, I'm glad we've made some progress and we've now got to try about six times as hard.
That's a very good ending. Thank you so much. Thank you very much indeed.